Oh, Mikey, but this is Ali Mahajani. I was listening to your show for the first time in a long time. I listened to 2 to 3 of them, and this is pretty good, but you got to know 2 things. Well, maybe 3. One, number one, is that you got to make one show. It's been like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, long time. Then you try to cry about, oh, don't nobody listen to my shit. Well, that's because they do not know when you would do one, okay? Okay, number two. What was number two? Do not ask for money. That is dumb. This is podcast, not professional radio, so shut up. Okay, number three. Whatever, that was it. Just one and two. So I just want to give you this comment. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Whoa. I can't believe it. The famous Ali Mahajani has left me a message. Sorry, guys. It's been a long time. It's been a kind of wacky few weeks. Great SOA stuff coming up for you next. First, this dedication to Rebecca Ney from Tranny Rec Radio. This is not for sensitive listeners, but I would like you to guess what surgery she just made it through successfully. There's some clues here. That's NoFX with My Vagina. I must give credit to Brendan and Sarah, who introduced that song to me. We were talking about Rebecca. We actually added her to the prayer thing one day at here at Koinonia, where I'm in a new location. I finally moved out of that the place where I was living before with the extremely... See, I'm still trying to be diplomatic. Aren't I just a wonderful person? I found that my desires and needs of living... we're different. So now I'm in the guest house, which is above the dining hall. And it's a much nicer kind of place. And there's not any pee on the floor in front of the toilet. And the refrigerator has plenty of space. I'll just leave it at that. But I'm so much happier. I was just the minute I finally was like, you know what? I got to move. And I have to give it to the Koinonia people. Really, it was like, okay, you can move. I mean, I've been through a lot with this sort of transition of having meetings and, you know, trying to deal with everything in a I guess in a reasonable communicative way, and it turned out that it just wasn't working out, so I'm really glad actually. So yeah, I'm here in the guest house. It's a little weird, and it's supposed to be haunted. I haven't been haunted yet, but every now and then I do have those weird sensations of like, there's somebody in here, and then no one's here. So it's been, God, 3 weekends ago was SOA, and I have a bunch of audio for you from that. It's been like, it was real depressing living in that other place. I passed a kidney stone last weekend, so I was like not out of bed, which really made me realize that staying here might not be such a good idea because I wouldn't have health insurance. I don't know. I'm still like going back and forth. I'm decided. I'm moving to New York. I get to New York City on the 1st of January. But it's a hard decision. I mean, well, especially after listening to this SOA stuff, it really reminds me that what I would love to do would be to be an independent media person and go to things like this. And the possibility or the possibility arose here that I could do something much like that. But I got to try out New York City, and living in the country is really hard. There are a lot of things that happen in the city that I want to have access to, and I really don't out here. So I'm going to New York, and the plan is to find a job, etc. But there's still the possibility of moving out here, because if I wanted to do social justice stuff, this would be a great place to do it. I mean, because it's really set up for that. And the community is supportive of everything. And this is really like the only group of real life people who I've met who are supportive of podcasting and don't sort of get condescending about it. I mean, podcasting people are supportive of it. But like out here in an intentional Christian community, all these people are like talking to me about the podcast. And I think there's going to be a link from the Koinonia e-newsletter to this show. So if you came from there, I hope you're not turned away by that first song I played for Rebecca. But I couldn't help it. So, what do we got next? Well, why don't I go ahead and let you hear some of this? This first thing, the SOA vigil was one of the most moving things I've done in my life. And I'm going to kind of try to tell the story for you as it comes. The first thing that you're going to hear is from, traditionally at this event, there are a number of people who cross over. Like, there's a huge fence. Now there are like three fences around the property. And I talked to this guy, Mike, who is connected. He doesn't live at the Open Door community in Atlanta, but he's connected with it. And that's how I knew him. And I found out the day before the huge vigil that he was going to go over the fence. He was planning on doing that. And you'll hear all about it right now.
Sure. Okay, I'm here with Mike. I don't even know your last name or if you want
to. My last name is Bosker Casey. BOSBURGCASEY.
Okay, and you're gonna. Okay. And you're gonna cross. Okay, you're gonna cross the line tomorrow.
I'm planning to, yeah.
Okay. So what does that really for you, what does it mean to do that? I mean, I guess I should explain that you're crossing the line on the property of School of Americas or whatever.
Well, I probably
it's
won't get there. I mean, School of the Americas, the so-called WINSEC Western Hemisphere Institute for Security and Cooperation, is one segment of Fort Benning.
Okay.
And it's real likely that anyone who crosses onto the base tomorrow will be arrested immediately. I mean, nobody's going to get real close to the School of the Americas facilities, I would expect.
Yeah. So, and doing by doing this, you know that you risk getting arrested and spending, 3 months in prison?
It's hard to say. I mean, no one knows what'll ever happen until it does.
Yeah.
And in the court setting, so the first part is, yeah, it's real likely that I would get arrested. And that's something that I'm moving forward with an expectation of. And that's just being realistic. But then in the court setting, who knows what will really happen. It's the maximum penalty for an event like this, because it's a misdemeanor, could be 6 months in federal prison. That's a possibility.
Right.
In years past, defendants for actions like this have received a mix of sentences, some 6 months, some 3 months, and some people have received probation, maybe a year's probation. So I don't know. I mean, it's possible that any of those things could happen.
Right. So what is, it's probably hard to just put into a couple words why you've made this decision, but do the best you can.
Sure. The School of the Americas is a failed institution, and it ought to be closed, yes. I understand this event to also be a way in which I and other people can demonstrate our call, not just for the closing of the School of Assassins, but for a fundamental transformation in American foreign policy, in particular as it relates to Latin America. But we should be able to view this also in light of the current ongoing war in Iraq.
Right.
And that this is an action yet against the School of Americas, yes, but against American foreign policy, and with some attentiveness to the ongoing war in Iraq.
Yeah, there's clearly like a lot of people are thinking the same thing here. I mean, because we've got it pretty much covered.
And I think, I think one thing that's helpful to consider, and that I think we're close to, is making a really available link between this facility, the School of Assassins, where so-called counterinsurgency tactics were taught, and torture and things like that, which then we saw carried out through the death squads in El Salvador and in Guatemala and in other places in Latin America. It's not that far to understand that being related to death squads in Iraq and to being related to torture that goes on in Iraq, and related even more specifically to torture and mass illegal incarcerations that we see happening in Guantanamo.
Right. So by doing this and by risking getting, you know, put in prison, what do you feel like that says, or how does that, what part of that act, I guess, transforms and how?
Well, I mean, there's a few different things that happen. One is that it transforms me.
Right.
I understand that when you put a big fence around something, you're trying to keep things out. And in this situation, the massive set of fences and the barriers that have been erected are trying to keep out a message of peace, a message of hope, a call for changing the way that things are. And so my hope is that we would bring that into that space. And I understand from a perspective of faith that that's one of the things we're called to do, is to go across those lines into unsafe space, bringing with us that kind of message. So I expect that this will have some transformative power on me. I hope that the more of us that continue to return and participate in this specific way in this movement will change the hearts of people who work at this facility and are trained here, and also in some specific ways, for instance, the judge who hears the court cases. Additionally, there's hopefully an effect that we can expect to have on our local communities. You know, as someone who lives in Georgia, I have to recognize that this happens in Georgia, you know, and we ought to take some measure of responsibility as citizens of Georgia for what happens here in our state, and call upon our government locally, our government, to change the way that they do things.
Right. All right. Well, it's getting loud, so maybe we should wrap it up. But I'll be following what happens as close as I can, I guess, maybe through Open Door.
Open Door is a possibility. The School for the Americas Watch.
Oh, yeah.
Group will certainly be following what happens with people who are arrested and were detained. It's likely that because of some arrangements that have already been made, it's likely that anyone arrested in the line crossing tomorrow could be released on bail as early as tomorrow evening. And my expectation is that trial dates will be set for the end of January.
Okay.
And so we'll see what happens then.
All right. Well, thanks for talking to me.
Sure. Thank you.
All of that drumming you're hearing in the background is from the Puppetistas, who stayed here at Koinonia while they were, like, the week before SOA.
And that turned out to be a really cool thing, cool and not so cool. I interviewed one of the puppetistas the night, the second night they were here. They were over at the KCOC, which is the Koinonia Community Outreach Center, which is over in the village, I believe it's called. I've talked before about the two neighborhoods on either side of this, so I won't go into it again. But they were over there building these puppets. The puppets were massive, and they made all of it out of most of it, I think, out of cardboard that they got from stores. So I did catch up with Jake the first day of SOA, and I'll give you some of that. It was great. Like, that week was so much fun because on Friday, I think it was, Jay and Ann and I had been playing music at lunchtime devotions. And this particular day, the puppetistas, one had his guitar. I can't remember that guy's name. And Jake, who you'll hear from later, had his accordion. We all played together. We each played our own deal, and then we sat together and we played No Woman, No Cry, I think, by Bob Marley. And it was just one of those, like, oh, this is exciting. I mean, it made the whole community thing, made me really understand. This is a little interview that happened sort of spontaneously between Brendan, who's one of the people that I just adore here at Koinonia, and his friend... what's his name? Gordon Mayhem. And here it is.
I guess for 70 years?
Yes, 36. I was protesting against convoys for World War II. We were opposed to convoys of shipping our military equipment to France and England to fight the Germans. And the Germans were subs were sinking, and that was my start. And then it's gone on for 7 years.
And maybe tell them about your involvement with the Y-12 nuclear plant.
Well,
you're actually...
it's a short story. I'm a civil engineer. I was working in Panama and Brazil, dodging the draft, actually. And then I came back to the United States, and I got the job before I came into the country because they would put me in jail if I if I'd gotten in the country. And I got to work for a construction engineer. And then I went over for a couple, 3 years. And then I went over and worked with Operation, and they dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I quit. And so I spent 3 years in a federal penitentiary, and that was the start.
I love it. And that was the start.
And you call yourself a peaceful planet person, right?
We coined that. Marianne Letter. You may have known Marianne Letter. We coined that together, peaceful planet. And that's all we need in the world is sometimes... I said, I'm a peaceful planet person, and Marianne says, well, he's a more peaceful planet person.
Gotcha.
You need to be a more peaceful.
So you guys know each other from Cincinnati, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Wow. He's contributed to my delinquency.
which aspect of your delinquency?
My training in nonviolent civil disability.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
He's
that's
my
some,
mentor.
That's
well,
some serious money.
I think I can get prove that.
You've spoken to him.
I think
because
I can.
Because him, we know you today.
Okay.
Ross has joined the conversation.
Yeah.
No, you can keep talking. Too late now. You're in it. Well, all right. Well, thanks for talking to
well,
me.
Well, yeah, that, I think, here, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. I got not this past summer, but the summer before, they put me in the jail, and they put me with the dope addicts, and for 5 days, and I didn't get any, what they call it, sleep deprivation for 5 days and nights.
Because the dope addicts were making so much noise?
Yeah, they would make so much noise in the daytime No, they would be quiet in the daytime, but the guards were not around, and they'd have a party at night.
Oh, wow.
And it messed up my sleeping schedule.
Bastards.
Well,
so how many years have you been coming to the vigil here at the School of the Americas?
I think every time I get a chance to, and I think it's been most of them. I've been across the line, but things are gotten tougher, I think.
Yeah. That fence is pretty treacherous looking.
Well, I brought a fella down that cut a hole in the fence. He was a protester. Surprising enough, he liked protesting and everything, but he talked to a recruiter, and this is not the thing to do. Now he's in the Marines.
Now, wow.
Well, that is quite a change.
Yeah.
But
wow, those are some persuasive recruiters, huh?
Yeah, well, that's what. And it, within a month after he's in, he was on crutches. And I told him that wasn't part of the deal with the Marine recruiters.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was on crutches because of the tough work they put the Marines through.
Man, that's scary.
That's a good advertisement for the Marines.
Oh, yeah. Well, all right. Well, thanks for talking
to
me.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, after that, I just had kind of a hodgepodge of different interviews I found on this big, long track. So I'm going to throw some more of these at you. There's like Food Nut Bombs, Jake from the Puppetistas, and maybe I'll break in here and there. This looks like it's going to be all day one of SOA for this show, because day two deserves its own deal. So anyway, I think this first interview is going to be from Food Nut Bombs. Yeah, here we go.
Yeah, okay, so this is Bunny from Food Nut Bombs, right?
Yeah, Food Nut Bombs.
Say again?
Katua Food Nut Bombs.
Okay.
In Knoxville, Tennessee.
Okay, so tell me, I've heard of Food Nut Bombs a lot, but I don't really know the whole, I don't know what you guys are all about. So tell me.
Well, Food Nut Bombs is an international organization, and we're just trying to kind of highlight the idea that our government is spending a lot of money on things like bombs and war and not enough money on meeting people's basic needs like food to eat and fresh water. So we organize kitchens and feed people that are hungry.
Okay, easy enough. Now, do you guys, I heard rumors that you guys dumpster a lot too. Is that like part of what's going on?
Yeah, the food here comes from multiple donations. Some are like natural food stores and individual donations, and some of those individual donations might be dumpstered food, yeah.
Okay, that's cool, because I've just gotten into the whole dumpstering thing in the past month or so. I live at a farm in Americus, Georgia, Koinonia, so I'm like totally into it now. But my friends...
People become very addicted at first. Yeah.
But then it's all this like great food that is perfectly good, yeah. All right, well, great. Thanks for talking to me. I'll get something to eat. Is there anything I've left out?
That's good. Thanks.
Okay, cool. Thanks. And I'm walking around by myself, hearing the dreaded, this little light of mine. Why do people keep singing the song? Here. David Rovix is up there. Okay, tell me your name. I've already forgotten it.
My name is Jake Weinstein.
And he's with the Puppetistas, who stayed at Koinonia this week, and I got to play with this week. That was so much fun at lunch the other day. So can you tell me semi-briefly what the Puppetistas are all about?
Well, you know, what we do is we use giant puppets and flags and stilts and all kinds of art that's extremely inclusive. I mean, our whole thing is about the more people can participate, the more people can be involved and included in this, the broader and the stronger is the movement that, of using art to create joy and to reinforce the message specifically that we are able to create a better world. And we model that world, what that world will look like, but by the kind of joy and the involvement that comes up around it.
Yeah, so the Puppetistas started here, what, like, somebody told me, I forgot how many years ago.
Five or six years ago. I think the first people who called themselves Puppetistas I heard were in Philadelphia when the people had their puppets confiscated and destroyed at the Republican National Convention. But people have been doing this kind of work for a long time. You know, the term puppetista may be relatively new, but the Bread and Puppet and other groups all around the country have been doing work using puppets and art to create kind of joyful convergences of and just kind of a communal sense of a release of joy, specifically focused on changing some of the injustices and addressing the injustices that exist in our society and in our culture.
Yeah. Yesterday I heard Hector. What is Hector's last name?
I can't remember.
Okay. He was at a panel I was at yesterday, and he was talking about bringing a sense of rebirth to the SOA vigil. Is that something that you guys are kind of feeling too, or?
Well, I mean, those are Hector's words. You know, I think what happens at the SOA vigil is really great. And, you know, I think the whole, we all need a sense of rebirth every minute in our lives. The SOA, no more so or less so than the rest of us. SOA watch people, I mean, you know, I think our first task at the SOA is to take it apart.
Yeah.
You know, it's to dismantle what's happening at the School of the Americas. And then perhaps, you know, as part of that process, we're thinking about what will take its place. So so my thing, you know, those are his terms, and that's not exactly how I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I knew they were his. I was just wondering if you were on the same page with it. With all our...
Well, I mean, I very much love what he has to say, and I'm truly inspired by it. I mean, he talks about resurrection, you know, rebirth, I guess, and resurrection are the same thing. I mean... And from a mythic point of view, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, and our stories always reflect that element that, you know, that there's suffering and there's loss, but even out of the suffering and the loss, new things are born.
Yeah.
So if you want to talk about rebirth in those words, that's where I'm at, you know.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one, too.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks. Thanks for talking to me.
Hey, thanks for talking to me.
And, yeah. There we go. Oh, I was recording already. Oh. Michael. So you guys are with... Jubilee USA Network, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, so
Jubilee USA Network, and everyone who's been coming up, I've been giving them the 30-second elevator pitch.
Go for it.
Which is basically we have we advocate for debt cancellation for impoverished countries.
Okay.
Mostly on the grounds that the origins of almost all of these debts are illegitimate, meaning that it was like, in many cases, undemocratic regimes. Borrowing from knowing creditors and not spending the money to benefit the impoverished majorities. So, I mean, along with that comes just the moral implications that these countries cannot afford to pay these debts.
Oh,
it's costing them their children's lives, literally. So what we do is we organize massive letter-writing campaigns and call-in days and other types of grassroots pressure to affect the policies that come out of the rich countries and the international financial institutions.
Yeah.
So I have literature here today that relates to Latin America, about Latin America's debt and the Inter-American Development Bank, and also about the links between debt and militarism, and about 2007, which is the Sabbath year, as called for in the scripture, every 7 years, debt cancellation to right relationships among people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the good thing for me? Oh, is there a website that people can go
yes,
to?
Yes, please. Thank you, Michael. It's www.jubileeusa.org.
Okay.
And they can sign up to join our monthly action alert list, where they'll get an email every month telling them who it's an opportune time to speak to and about what legislation.
So, yeah, that's good. I'm always looking for, like, okay, now what do we do?
Right,
you know,
yeah,
so
of course.
Like we need some kind of action to take.
Of course, yeah, so that's the thing. And then I've been giving out the literature and asking people to sign up and giving out some of these freebies.
Okay, cool.
So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Now can I make you about that? Okay, tell me your name again. I forgot.
My name's Casey.
And you're with Common Ground in New Orleans?
Yeah, I'm the volunteer coordinator for
Okay.
Common
Ground. Oh, that's a good person to talk to, since I'm still considering it. I was going to do it months ago, and things happened. So
well,
tell me, do you get a lot of that?
A lot of what?
People like, oh yeah, we're going to be there, and then not showing? Or?
I think we have more people showing up than not showing.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. I'm glad I'm in the minority.
So
tell me a little bit about what Common Grounds does.
Common Ground. That's an amorphous question. Common Ground has a lot of projects that are running right now, kind of split over the West Bank and the East Bank. The West Bank has the Free Clinic in Algiers, and that's been around since the very beginning of Common Ground, and it's still a huge community resource. I also have the Woodlands apartment complex, which is an affordable housing project that Common Ground has been managing. However, just been served eviction notices by the person who bought the housing project. And so that's a big fight in the legal system right now. Common Ground is fighting to keep the Woodlands, and it's not just about the Woodlands, but it's about affordable housing in New Orleans, which is a huge need. And people aren't being allowed back into their homes that even weren't even flood damaged. The Ninth Ward project is the one that I work most intimately with, and we're still gutting houses, and we really, really need volunteers to come down and get houses with us. We have 800 houses left on our list, and the demolition deadline is the end of January, the 31st, where people need to have their homes gutted by that time, or the city's going to bulldoze them, that's what they're saying. So we are trying to, anyone who wants to come down for a week, 2 weeks, a month, whatever they can do, gut houses with us. We also have the free legal clinic and legal advice for people. We have a tech collective that does all the tech for Common Ground and also sets up community media labs where people can come use fax machines, internet, whatever they need to help get in touch with FEMA or to get their insurance claims put through, even just to use the internet, whatever you need to use it for. What else do we have? Kids and Community Program has been running after school tutoring stuff. It's kind of on a stay right now. A lot of people have left and are just kind of reorganizing.
Right.
We also have the bioremediation project, which is still pretty active, and they use natural processes to determine toxicity levels and what is in the soil, and then use natural processes to draw them out, like compost tea. Sunflowers will draw mercury out of soil. Mustard greens will take things like arsenic out of soil.
Oh, wow.
So it's just trying to remediate the natural environment in New Orleans. It's really toxic.
Wow. Yeah, one of the things when I was talking about going down there, a friend of mine who was in New Orleans said, don't come. There's all this, like, she freaked out and was like, there's so much pollution, everyone's getting sick.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether she was overreacting, but I mean, I know that it must be. So if someone were to volunteer, what could they expect their week or 2 weeks or whatever to be like?
If people, right now, most of the projects are trying to transition into local volunteers. It's a year later, and a lot of them are more established. For out-of-town volunteers, if you're coming for 2 weeks or less, we need you to gut houses. So what you'd expect is you'd be staying with us in the Upper Ninth Ward at St. Mary of the Angels School, and we house and feed all of our volunteers.
Okay.
We have Rainbow Family in the kitchen. They're doing phenomenal food. You'd be getting up at 7, getting organized into work crews. You'd go out gutting all day, and you'd work until 4, and then you'd come back. And actually, right now, we're working with the Anti-Racist Working Group to have a political education program at St. Mary's. So all volunteers coming through are not only volunteering with us, but we're starting an education program where you'll leave with a lot more information.
Yeah. So you could look at it sort of like a free vacation in a way, like because you house and feed. Not that it's a vacation, but you know, like a lot of times to me, it's like, oh, how does it work to go there? How do you have money and stuff? You don't really need any.
You need to get yourself there. The expense is getting yourself there.
Yeah,
yourself,
but other than that, you're taken care of.
We're really trying to quash the vacation vibe.
I got you.
Work.
Okay, sorry, I shouldn't use that word. But what I meant was you don't have to pay a lot to, or you don't lose a lot to go do it.
But we try and make it so it's not a thing where it's only the privileged volunteers can come in. Like anyone who wants to come and work will support your basic needs so that you can do that. We can't afford to pay for people's transportation to get there and back. But once you're there, we try and cover your needs.
Okay. Right on. Okay, well, thanks. And it's Common Ground, singular, right? I keep saying plural. .org, is that the website?
Common Ground Relief.
CommonGroundRelief.org. All right, thanks very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And that concludes this sort of sightseeing thing, or soundseeing. I want to say I'm really pleased I got to meet Jeffrey, too. Hi, Jeffrey. He used to live here. I don't even know how long he lived here, but now he's working with Common Ground in New Orleans. And that's among the things I want to do. I'm having such a hard time with, I don't want to get into it. It's fear, basically. I'm afraid what happens if I don't have a job and insurance and et cetera, like, how does that work? So I'm not ready to make the jump yet. We'll see what happens when I go back to life, and have a job and get sucked into that life. We'll see how I survive. More will be revealed. Anyway, that's day one of SOA. Day two, I'll get it up this week. I'll do another show about that. And also, I didn't get to interview Sister Helen Prejean, but I did record her talk. So I'll do also a show. God, can I do three shows this week? I missed 3 weeks. Might as well. I'll do what I can. I'll get at least one more show up this week with SOA Day 2, which was an incredible, incredible day. I don't want to catch myself saying something cheesy. It was an incredible, incredible day. So that's all of the show for today. You know what? I'd like to leave you with Daniel Johnston. I finally got to see the devil in Daniel Johnston. And I wanted to see it. It's one of those funny things. And when I lived in Houston and I could go see it in the theater when it was out, nobody wanted to go with me. And I just never managed to go by myself to see this movie because none of my friends seemed interested. There were two visitors here, Dave and Tim. And they were totally into it. Sarah and Brendan checked it out. And a whole bunch of us, a bunch of people watched it one night. And then Dave, Tim, and I watched it the next night over in the duplex. And what a great movie. Daniel Johnston rocks. This song is called Some Things Last a Long Time. And you'll hear from me again this week with more.
True.